Hello, my friends, and welcome back to yet another episode of Watching the Watchers Live. My name is Robert Govea. I am a criminal defense attorney at the R&R Law Group, located in the always beautiful and sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. And today, my friends, we are talking about appeals. We're talking about penalties. We're talking about fees, motions for sanctions. Katie Hobbs was very unhappy that Carrie Lake filed a lawsuit against her and said, we have some issues with the way you ran the election of yourself, and we got some questions about it. She didn't like that. So they filed a motion for sanctions. They wanted over $500,000. They wanted $600,000 or so. A large portion of that would be going back over to individuals like lawyers, and Mark Elias was one of those lawyers who is not on the case, but several of the people who work at his law firm. We talked about them. His law firm was on the captions of several filings in this whole debacle. And so we've got a lot to get to today. We're going to take a look at the motion for sanctions that was filed by Katie Hobbs. We're going to take a look at Carrie Lake's response to the motion for sanctions. And then we're going to go through Judge Thompson's opinion, because although he didn't issue sanctions against Carrie Lake, he did order her to make some payments back over to Katie Hobbs. So it's going to be a lot of money, tens of thousands of dollars. Carrie Lake is still on the hook for it, going over to Katie Hobbs. But we do see that there are talks of appeal, and so we'll explore that for a quick minute. In fact, and we'll see if Carrie Lake has her notice of appeal filed by the end of the show. So we've got three legal documents to get to. Before we take a look over at some analysis, and I wanted to share with you this story that was a great report from an individual named Rachel Alexander, and she is a writer. She's a journalist over for a local newspaper here in Arizona, but she also contributes to Town Hall. And she published a great story today. She referenced a couple people you might know, and I wanted to share it with you because the one thing she hit, like right out of the park, is identifying this strategy, this election litigation strategy, this sort of election lawyer warfare kind of a thing that's we've been talking a lot about here. Mark Elias, thrilled as heck that Carrie Lake lost this, right? And he has been what I have considered to be the head in many ways of the Democrats' litigation efforts, I guess. I mean, I guess I'd say that. He's sort of leading the charge. He is the organizer. He's sort of the architect of the entire onslaught. He is very excited about this. And he published a piece that explained all the litigation that Democracy Docket, his organization, was involved in over the last year. So like a sort of a retrospective on 2022. And they did a lot. And so we have to read it so that we're familiar with what they're doing. And honestly, if the Republicans don't get their butts in gear and get an answer to this, they're not going to win elections ever again, in my humble opinion. And so as you can see, my friends, we have a lot to get to today. And if you want to be a part of the show, the best place to do that is by heading over to watchingthewatchers.locals.com. We've got an amazing community over there chatting away. Let's see who's over there. Words Mean Things is over there. We've got Resident Bedoins in the house. We have C. Reed. He says, if a man speaks in the forest and there's no woman to hear him, is he still wrong? That's a great question. Very profound. Probably the answer is yes. But you can see there's a lot of individuals over there, an amazing community at watchingthewatchers.locals.com. So come check us out. We did a morning stream today, a little extra members only stream. You can also join on YouTube, become a member there and get access to a lot of that same stuff. But all right, so let's get right into the meat and potatoes of the show today. Katie Hobbs files a motion for sanctions against Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake responds and Judge Thompson issued his opinion. We're going to go through all three today. But Katie Hobbs, very upset about this. She said, wait a minute, hold on. How dare you, Carrie Lake, challenge me? I'm the Secretary of State. I'm sort of in charge of a lot of this stuff. But I did nothing wrong in running the election of myself. Everything was perfect. Never mind all of the delays on election day. Never mind all of the printer tabulation errors. Never mind what I think is massive voter suppression in the form of people just driving by polling places, never checking in, saying there's long lines and just being dissuaded from participating. Despite all of those issues, Katie Hobbs says it was perfect. It was excellent. And she was making the argument that Carrie Lake was baseless, that these claims, this lawsuit, was done in bad faith. So we're going to see exactly what she says before we look at Carrie Lake's response and Judge Thompson's opinion. Let's dive right in. And you'll notice this was filed the day after Christmas, 7:33 a.m. on 12/26, Maricopa County Superior Court. And this was the deadline, right? These people were probably working furiously over the Christmas holiday break. And you'll notice some familiar law firms on this filing. First, Perkins Coie. You remember them. Same law firm that we've talked a lot about here. Remember Michael Sussman? Remember where he worked? Oh, yeah. Perkins Coie. And that was the guy who was interfacing with Jim Baker, who was over at the FBI, who now works at Twitter, or did formerly until he got fired by Elon for being, in my opinion, a little bit dishonest. We also have Abba Khanna. We got Perkins Coie in the house. Guess who else is in the house? The Elias Law Group. Oh, Mark Elias. You're kidding me. Very familiar with him. Guess where he was working? Back during the Michael Sussman saga. Oh, yeah. Perkins Coie right there at that law firm. Right. They were sort of in cahoots. And he got called to testify, Mark Elias, at the Michael Sussman trial. We listened to his testimony. Mark Elias, very smart guy, remembers everything. Like an election swordsmith. And I don't mean this jokingly. Like, the guy's a smart dude. He built a law firm. He is cleaning up Democratic money like a Hoover, right? You know, I would presume, because he's being hired by them. And he's just filing lawsuits left and right. And so he was called in to testify at the Michael Sussman trial. And of course, Michael Sussman didn't testify. And Mark Elias, who's a very, very sharp dude, suddenly couldn't remember anything. Actually was very forgetful during his line of inquiry. So you see he's there from Elias.law. We've also got C. Ford. Christina Ford is also there from the Elias Law Group, along with Elena Rodriguez. Okay, so we've got a bunch of different lawyers, three different lawyers at least. Four from Mark Elias's law firm here. And then you've got another several lawyers, A. Yost, Austin, and Alexis Deneman, two from Perkins Coie, along with Daniel Barr. So we've got seven lawyers, it looks like, just from this short header, if I've counted that correctly. And that's a lot, seven of them. Woo, I bet that's pretty expensive to get seven lawyers from New York and DC all filing on behalf of your clients. Let's see what they ask for. Carrie Lake versus Katie Hobbs. You can see this is the governor-elect, Katie Hobbs, sick, the motion for sanctions and joinder in the Maricopa County defendant's memorandum and points of authority. So this is her saying, we want sanctions. We know Maricopa County wants sanctions. We're just going to join in their request for sanctions. So they write, on December 24th, Judge, this court, you denied Carrie Lake's contest and you entered an order confirming, confirming the election of Katie Hobbs as the Arizona governor-elect. All right, we're just going to keep going. Now, having fully prevailed in this manner, governor-elect Katie Hobbs, respectfully moves this court for an award of her attorney's fees, right? That's how angry she is. Because she says that these claims were brought without substantial justification. The governor-elect argues Katie is entitled to fees. She says that she joins the memorandum and points of authority and wants motions for sanctions. She says that Carrie Lake brought her claims without substantial justification. Never mind everything that we saw here, literally on election day. Never mind all of the news stories that the national media was laughing at. And that this unreasonably expanded or delayed the proceedings, and that Carrie Lake's claims were groundless and not made in good faith. And they say that sanctions, therefore, are appropriate. Katie Hobbs says that we share the court's sense of urgency in confirming the results of the election, that she won fair and square. Under the circumstances, however, the governor-elect urges the court to direct the entry of a final judgment and confirm the results so that there's no further delay. Hobbs says that considering the compressed schedule on which this matter has proceeded, many of that is, of course, is dictated by law. The statutes say it's got to go from this to this to that. They say, and the urgency in once and for all concluding judicial involvement in the question of the governor's election. They say this is an example of the rare case in which a judgment on the merits would be appropriate prior to the resolution of attorney's fees. They say here in this case, the governor-elect's lawyers will need time to export all the billing records from their electronic timekeeping systems and then fully review all of them. So they're going to go and do an accounting, essentially, of their records. Katie Hobbs says, in the alternative, the governor-elect requests that the court grant her a partial fee application. So they say, if the court is inclined to grant Katie Hobbs's motion for sanctions, but disinclined to reserve judgment on the amount of attorney fees to order, the governor submits a partial fee application and supporting declarations based on estimates for this contest. Okay, in other words, she says, we don't know how much we spent on this case, probably a boatload, but if you're going to grant sanctions, we'll give you a rough estimate. I mean, we can ballpark it for you. And the ballpark, you know, is probably going to be close. And if you want to do that, then go ahead and do it. They write, Governor-elect Hobbs retained Elias Law Group, dun, 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 and Perkins Coie. Obvious, because those are the two heavy hitter Democratic law firms in the country to represent her in this contest. And they keep winning. Good move. Both firms instruct their attorneys to enter their time in internal timekeeping systems. In general, at the end of the month, a partner reviews the time entries for accuracy and reasonableness, makes necessary adjustments, and then sends an invoice. Wait a minute. Does that mean that Mark Elias is going to review all of these invoices? I mean, it's his law firm, right? So presumably he's a partner. Maybe, I don't know. Elias Law Group. So all of these attorneys are going to submit their time cards to Mark, and Mark's going to have to decide what to do with it. Well, I think you should have billed a lot more for that one. Neither firm has completed that process for December. And moreover, the compressed timeline between the entrance of the order on December 24 and the deadline for submitting this motion, December 26, has precluded either from doing their full accounting prior to this filing. Nevertheless, we are able to provide an estimate of the total fees as well as the accounting and a subset of those fees that are definite and not subject to adjustment. Here are the estimated fees. Woo, woo. It's a good day for the Elias Law Group. Man, they made some good money on this one. Woo. Estimated fees for additional legal services in connection with this election contest are $550,000. Woo. Of which $457,000 is for the Elias Law Group, as set forth in a declaration, and $93,000 for Perkins Coie. Man, the lawyers are cleaning up on these things. It was a two-day trial. There was a bunch of filings and stuff, but that's a pretty good, it's a pretty good day. All right, what did they have? Four lawyers on this case? They had four lawyers on this case. They worked on this for probably, I don't know, 2 weeks? 3 weeks? Man, that's a nice chunk of money. Man, okay, it says this estimated fee total represents the adjusted value of the total lawyer and support staff currently entered into the timekeeping system that's later going to be subject to the standard bill review protocol. Yeah, so they really want that check coming over with Carrie Lake's name on it for 600 and something thousand bucks. They're asking for a whopper there. Now, they say the definite fees and expenses, they say also fees incurred for lawyer and other staff are $56,000, of which $35,000 goes to the Elias Law Group, another $20,000 to Perkins Coie. They say these are for fixed periods of time. They had 2 hours December 19th, 6.5 hours, and 7.5 hours on the 21st and the 22nd. Those were the days of the trial, obviously. They also want expenses incurred for their expert witness. Remember Kenneth Mayer. He incurred, wow, he was $22,000 for that day. My goodness. 22 grand for him. We got 4,600 for ballot inspection. And that's it. So a big, nice chunk of money. Of course, all of that signed off on by the Elias Law Group. Abba Khanna, Lalitha Maduri, and Christina Ford, along with Elena Rodriguez. All over there representing contestee Katie Hobbs. They copied Carrie Lake's lawyers, obviously. as well as the county. So they want a lot of money. Over $600,000 because they say this election was perfect. And Carrie Lake should have never brought it at all. In fact, it was baseless. There was no reason for this at all. And she was delaying the results without any substantial justification, none of it being made in good faith. Well, let's see what Carrie Lake says in response to this one. Carrie Lake responds to the request for sanctions filed by Katie Hobbs and her lawyers. This one came in 5 o'clock p.m., 1226, Maricopa County Superior Court, signed off on by Kurt Olson and Blem Law. This is Carrie Lake's corrected response to the defendant's motion for sanctions. Carrie Lake versus Katie Hobbs. It says here, this response is to the coordinated filing of three motions for sanctions and applications that have come from everybody. We got it from the defendants. We got it from Hobbs. We got it from the Secretary of State in her personal capacity. Thus, for the court's convenience, we're just filing all of this together in one. We're not going to file several responses, one per defendant. So Carrie Lake starts. She says, Maricopa County's motion for sanctions and for attorney's fees and the joinder by Katie Hobbs has no basis in law or fact. At issue here is whether or not counsel for plaintiff Carrie Lake should be sanctioned, right? Carrie Lake's lawyers, for bringing claims that defendants argue are not without substantial justification, but were brought in bad faith and constitute harassment. Lake's lawyers say, though this court found four defendants, Katie Hobbs, on this issue of whether Carrie Lake had shown clear and convincing evidence of intentional misconduct, neither the court's findings nor the record support a motion for sanctions. In fact, Arizona law and the record at trial reflect that defendants' motions for sanctions have no basis whatsoever. Moreover, the issues raised before this court were of significant concern to millions of Arizona voters as to the cause of chaos that arose on Election Day and the administration of elections in Maricopa County generally, and Carrie Lake's claims deserved to be brought and heard. Lake's lawyers continue. They write specifically, Carrie Lake's claims were neither legally groundless, nor were they brought in bad faith or for the purposes of harassment, which is what is required under Arizona law in order to justify sanctions. They say Lake's complaint laid out detailed facts and alleged violations of law supported by the sworn testimony of over 200 witnesses, including employees from Maricopa County Tabulation Center and Runbeck Election Services. Now, many of those affidavits and declarations we didn't see or look at here, some of them were even filed under seal. They also brought the testimony of credentialed experts in electronic voting systems and election voter surveys. We had Richard Barris at People's Pundit. We also had Clay Parikh, who talked about printer scripts having to be rewritten in order to update the printer settings across all of the different tabulators. And internal government documents, only recently made public. The complaint from Carrie Lake unequivocally identified specific numbers of illegal votes that far exceeded the 17,000 vote margin between Carrie Lake and Katie Hobbs. Indeed, they say the court denied Katie Hobbs' motion to dismiss previously. Count two, the judge said, yeah, there was enough there. That was the illegal tabulator configuration. And that was the idea that somebody somewhere, right, an identifiable person interfered or adjusted, you know, with malfeasance, did something that caused the outcome of the election to be in question. There was also the chain of custody question. This was the idea that there was not proper forms being used and that Runbeck employees were inserting ballots into the chain of custody, literally dropping them into the courier boxes. The judge said, yeah, both of those, actually, there's enough there to state a claim, right? Finding that plaintiff had stated a claim in accordance with Arizona law. So if you can state a claim, if the judge says, yeah, there is actually something here, I'd like to hear the evidence on it, how can you be responsible for sanctions then? If the judge said, there's kind of a little bit here. The other eight of them got dismissed, but two of them moved forward to trial. Lake's lawyers say that fact alone supports a denial of the motion for sanctions. And while this court ultimately found after trial that Kerry Lake had not proven intentional misconduct by clear and convincing evidence, that is a far cry from amounting to sanctionable under Arizona law. Indeed, the testimony at trial exposed facts, which while the court found were not sufficient to show clear and convincing evidence of violation of the election law, nonetheless, it showed defendants' conflicting testimony on issues of Maricopa County and their administration of the elections and their compliance with Arizona law that injured Kerry Lake and millions of Arizona voters. Therefore, they say that Hobbs's motion should be denied and no sanctions should be imposed because it's not baseless. It's not in bad faith. The judge said it's good enough to move forward. So the argument begins. Kerry Lake's lawyers say, listen, Judge, Katie Hobbs asserts that an awards of attorney's fees is justified under the law. They say that Kerry Lake brought these claims, quote, without substantial justification, and that the claims were not made, quote, in good faith. But as demonstrated above, Your Honor, claims were substantiated, they were brought in good faith, and they are a matter of public concern. None of Hobbs's arguments has any merit, nor do Hobbs and her team point to a single case analogous to this case that would justify sanctions and attorney's fees. So they go back, you know, in the record and they say, well, other election lawsuits have been brought. Have they also been sanctioned? Because if they have not, why would they be sanctioned here suddenly? Kerry Lake's lawyers give us some case law. They write, there was a high bar for establishing entitlement to sanctions. There's a case from 1998 called Fisher. It says to award sanctions under these statutes, the court must determine that the party's claim hits three checkboxes. And we love checkboxes here. We talked a lot about them in this trial. Checkbox one, whether it constitutes harassment, sanctions. Number two, whether it's groundless. And number three, whether it's not made in good faith. All three elements, all three checkboxes must be shown, and the trial court must make appropriate findings in fact and conclusions of law. Okay, so it's a very high standard. Just like we said, the Kerry Lake standard was basically impossibly high, right? She's got to hit the standard of clear and convincing evidence, which is, you know, according to this judge, I would say it's more analogous to like beyond a reasonable doubt, if we're being honest about this, which is a higher standard. But the judge applied the standard as the judge saw fit. And as we went through those checkboxes, right, the judge said Kerry Lake didn't hit those and they needed to hit them. Here, it's the same concept, but now the government, in fact, the trial court and the party requesting sanctions, they've got to hit the checkboxes. So the burden shifts. In the trial, Kerry Lake had to prove the claim, right? She was the one responsible for saying this election was fraudulent. Now that it's over, the request for sanctions goes back over to Hobbs. Lake's team, they continue. They say there was a recent case, by the way, that's almost perfectly on point, tells us everything we need to know. In that prior case, the trial court awarded Saul attorney's fees in connection with an abusive process claim. And they found that Goldman's claim was, quote, clearly groundless. Why? Because his position that an absolute privilege applies only to the content of a bar charge, not the act of filing a bar charge, was directly contrary to longstanding and well-established law. All right. So this looks like it's a lawyer filing a complaint and he did, you know, he's sort of messing up the complaint and it's a much more clear-cut case. It's a request for sanctions, but it doesn't look like it is actually an election case. The trial court also found that Goldman did not act in good faith because he continued to pursue the abusive process claim on the bar charge after Saul cited binding legal authority that established the claim was meritless. And Goldman even admitted the claim was likely barred as a matter of law. Okay, so they're giving us this compare and contrast. You know, something we do a lot in the law is we compare and contrast cases and fact patterns. It's kind of like buying a house. You go to a house and you say, why is that house $100,000 more than that house? Well, it's because it's got these extra things on it. Oh, well, that makes sense. And so that's why it costs what it costs. Kind of the same thing here. Well, why did that lawyer have to pay sanctions? Why did it cost him something? Well, because he has these three features. That's expensive for him. Same thing. Here, this lawyer in a prior case, a meritless claim because the opposing counsel cited it for him and it was clear on his face. And he even admitted, he's like, oh yeah, that's a great case. My case is ruined. Thanks for citing that for us. But he probably said something like, I don't care. I'm filing this against you and suing you anyways. Okay. Which of course constitutes harassment. They did do a finding of harassment, but they did not find the action was brought solely for the purpose of harassment. And so the Court of Appeals reversed that one, holding that even where an attorney believes where his client's claim is likely barred as a matter of law and a long shot, that sanctions are not appropriate where a party and their attorneys have advanced a thoughtful, well-reasoned, and well-supported position on the law. They say that that is exactly the case here. Lawyers are supposed to file. Lawyers are supposed to go out there and throw elbows and get into it. That's the whole purpose of our adversarial system of law. It's a feature, not a bug. Some people will get critical with lawyers. Oh, they're just lawsuit happy, or why this is frivolous, or this is just a waste of time, or this election stuff. A lot of criticism has been brought on that for the Brunson Adams case, right? Brunson versus Adams, 22-360, I think it is, in the Supreme Court docket. This is the point of law, right? That's what lawyers do, is litigate and fight over this stuff. You're supposed to file. And so to suddenly just say that any lawyer that files an election claim is now, you know, subject to sanctions because they didn't like the lawsuit or they don't like the claim, what does that do? It chills speech. It dissuades people from filing. It dissuades lawyers from representing losers of elections. And it dissuades losers of elections from filing claims. And it dissuades anybody from keeping close tabs on the elections because they don't want to get hit with a $600,000 sanction if they lose the case. So it's trying to chill this entire arena of law. Why? Because Mark Elias, Perkins Coie, the Democrats already own it. Defendants, they write, misstate this court's order and the record to concoct their sanctions motion, saying that they're sort of manipulating this here and then they're making up justification. They write, Maricopa argues that among Carrie Lake's multiple thousands of pages of disclosed exhibits, they say there's not a single piece of evidence that such intentional misconduct directed to affect the outcome of the election had occurred. And, you know, again, This is you can really splice this a number of different ways. People are having a lot of fun with this intentionality phrase. What constitutes intentionality? The judge wanted to see a person with literal intent, okay, direct intent. You know, somebody who was there on election day said, I hate Carrie Lake. I'm going to interfere with these printer settings. I updated the script at this time. That's it, right? That's the bar that the judge wanted. He said so. And we, you know, covered that and said, this is going to be a tough one. But that's what he wanted. Now, other people, you and I, might be able to step back on this thing and use a concept that we often find in tort law called res or re ipsa loquitur or re ipsa loc or res ipsa loquitur, however you want to say it. And law school students will beat each other up over this. But re ipsa, the thing speaks for itself. The fact that we had delays for in many places for up until 12 o'clock or even in the afternoon, it speaks for itself that there was some sort of misconduct in the election process. Because how else could something be botched so badly on election day? It's gross negligence in a way that really deprecates the legitimacy and the faith in the election, which is the point of all of this. But they carry on. The judge wanted more intentional misconduct. The government says, no, there wasn't any at all. These were all innocent mistakes, man. And we sent people to go fix them. That's evidence that we wanted to remedy the problem. But Carrie Lake's lawyers, they say, in fact, the government assertion is itself false. Specifically, despite the court finding that Carrie Lake had not sufficiently met the court standard, in my opinion, a very high standard, the court recognized in its December 24th order that Carrie Lake's witnesses did in fact testify and did provide evidence of intent and outcome determinative misconduct. In the order, they said, the court cannot follow Mr. Sonneclair to ascribing intentional misconduct to any party. Now, I think they might be reading the judge's words as saying that there was intentional misconduct, but this, that it wasn't assigned to any party. They say Barris's analysis also does not have the degree of precision that would provide clear and convincing evidence that the result did change the outcome. They're also referencing Clay Parikh's testimony, where he said 19-inch ballot image could not happen accidentally, would be detected by logic and accuracy testing. That came from day one. And Honey testified that the decision to not follow the chain of custody requirements is an intentional decision, right? So decisions to not do things, too, are also intentional. Oh, we didn't test for 19-inch printers. Well, okay. Well, should you have? Maybe, because it turned out to be a problem. Maybe you should have done some additional testing. Maybe you didn't do that intentionally. So that's where we get into this definitional disagreement. The thing speaks for itself. The fact that there were systemic problems across the entire county speaks for itself. Or we need hard, concrete example and evidence, like written in writing, of who did it, what time they did it, how many votes specifically that action adjusted. Carrie Lake continues. They say that the government in Maricopa, they also cite certain of Carrie Lake's Twitter posts for supporting sanctions. Is the FBI working with them now, or what are they doing? First, they say that the defendants, Katie Hobbs, they cite no case law that supports sanctions based on Twitter posts. And they say Carrie Lake has a First Amendment right to voice her opinions. And so this criticism must have been in one of the other requests for sanctions, which would have come from the board of directors. We did not see that in Katie Hobbs's original request for sanctions, but remember, there were two others, or at least one other. Second, Maricopa seeks to support the motion for sanctions by citing a tweet to an article that was authored by someone else. Her name is @RachIC. Carrie Lake retweeted her tweet. And we're going to read that article a little bit later. Rachel IC, you can follow over here, @RachelIC. She's on Twitter, and she had a great article in Town Hall, which we're going to get to shortly. But Carrie Lake, which I retweeted this too. And Carrie Lake did as well, because it's a great article. But they want sanctions for that. Lake's lawyers say, tweets, especially those authored by others, do not support sanctions under Arizona law. Maricopa also argues that plaintiff unnecessarily expanded these proceedings to include Maricopa County and certain officers as defendants. So Carrie Lake named a bunch of additional people in lawsuits. The evidence and the testimony in this proceeding, discussed above and below, shows that the naming of Maricopa County and other officials and defendants was justified. Indeed, evidence came from over 200 sworn declarations, expert testimony, directly on Maricopa County's conduct in the 2020 general election, and it shows that Carrie Lake brought these claims in good faith. They carry on. They explain. They say, Judge, in the 2022 general election, Maricopa tabulators were configured to read only a 20-inch ballot image. Prior to this trial, the public did not know that on election day, illegally configured 19-inch ballot images were printed on 20-inch ballot paper, thereby rendering thousands of ballots unreadable on the tabulators. Carrie Lake's cyber expert Clay Parikh came in. He discovered this issue upon examining a sampling of ballots from six different Maricopa County vote centers pursuant to the law. Mr. Parikh found that these 19-inch misconfigured ballots existed, quote, at all six vote centers, all six of them, from which he inspected the ballots, and that the 19-inch ballot issue affected over 42% of the combined spoiled and duplicated ballots that he inspected, and 93% of the duplicated ballots that he inspected. Which makes sense, because the duplicated ballots would be the ones duplicated that couldn't be read, and the ones that couldn't be read were the ones that were 42% of the problems, because they were printed on the wrong paper. As Clay Parikh testified, Maricopa County did not maintain the duplicated ballots with original ballots as required by law. So there's no way for him to confirm that the duplicate ballot during the inspection was done appropriately. And that came from his transcript at that time. You see, they're referencing all of them. They say door three ballots refer to more than 17,000 ballots that were rejected by the vote center tabulators as unreasonable, readable, and cordoned off for later tabulation. So they're telling us that door three ballots means over 17,000. Over 17,000 is more than the margin of error. It's like 17,117 or something like that. Big numbers there. They write, significantly, Maricopa County Director of Elections, or I would say co-director because he's partners with somebody else over there, Scott Jarrett, he took the witness stand prior to Mr. Parikh's disclosure of these findings. Remember, he was one of the first witnesses. When asked if he knew of any way a 19-inch ballot image could be projected onto 20-inch paper in the 2020 general election, Mr. Jarrett testified, "I'm not aware of it occurring. And I'd be surprised if there was a ballot on a printer that had a 19-inch ballot on it. I'd be surprised." Do we have that testimony? I think we might. Let's see if we can grab that real quickly. Because there was a lot to that. And I think we do have it. Right here, as a matter of fact. Let's listen to this fella. Scott Jetter.
If it was printed with a 19-inch image on 20-inch paper and run through the tabulator.
You need to be more specific with your question.
So we talked about the ballot definition, and for the 2022 general election, Maricopa was operating with a 20-inch ballot image, correct?
That's correct.
And the tabulators at the vote center were programmed for to accept and read a ballot with a 20-inch image, correct?
That's correct.
What would happen if the ballot on demand printer printed out a 19-inch image on the 20-inch paper and ran it through the tabulator?
We did not specifically test for that because in this specific election, because none of the ballots on our ballot on demand printers had a 19-inch ballot. They all had a 20-inch ballot. So I can answer a question about our testing related to the 20-inch ballot that was installed on all the ballot on demand printers.
If a 19-inch image was installed, or strike that, if a 19-inch ballot image was printed out on a print on a ballot on demand printer and run through the tabulator that was configured for the 2022 general election,
right,
would that tabulator accept that ballot or reject it?
Objection, Your Honor. First, this calls for speculation. Second, I think the witness just said he hasn't run that test. I got your objection, speculation. I'm speaking to objection. So, Mr. Jarrett, if you understood the question.
If you understood the question, you can answer it.
Say that I don't know specifically. Willing to say that I don't know specifically for this 2020 election. I know based on my historical, not out of the 2022 election, know based on my historical knowledge. Timing marks on the ballot matter, and it would need to be a 20-inch ballot to run through that tabulation.
Okay, it's pretty important then.
But we did not specifically test a 19-inch ballot through the 2022 tabulation equipment because there were no 19-inch ballot images installed on our ballot on-demand printers.
Whoa! But there were, weren't there? I mean, it was actually printing.
Prior to the 2022 general election, did Maricopa County employ a 19-inch ballot image?
Yes, we did.
And when did Maricopa County employ a 19-inch image just prior to the 2022 general election?
The most recent election would be the August 2022 primary.
Yeah.
Did Maricopa County perform logic and accuracy testing strike that. What evidence exists that shows the results of the logic and accuracy testing?
All right, so that's the line of questioning from the Kerry Lake team. They brought him out. He gave that line of testimony. Any way that this could be presented, he said, I'm not aware of it occurring. I'd be surprised if there was a ballot on a printer that had a 19-inch ballot on it. Footnote 5. However, when Mr. Jarrett took the witness stand the next day on behalf of the government, Jarrett testified that just after Election Day, Maricopa County had in fact discovered, wow, that 19-inch ballots were found in 3 vote centers. You're kidding me. That Maricopa County was, one, performing a root cause analysis of this issue. They don't have any answers as to why it happened. Number 2, that Maricopa County had not disclosed this issue to the public, despite the county's public statements downplaying the chaos on Election Day and issuing a detailed written response to the AZ Attorney General's office about the Election Day chaos. None of it mentioned. And the still unexplained existence of these 19-inch ballots found by Mr. Parikh at all 6 vote centers he inspected, which cannot be processed by the tabulators and thus must either be spoiled, require duplication. It violates, among other things, the requirements about logic and accuracy testing designed to ensure that print-on-demand ballots are in fact able to be processed through the tabulators. You got to use the right paper size. Law says so. They also say that Kerry Lake's claims show that there were, in fact, good faith chain of custody violation allegations. Here we talk about Stephen Richer, the county recorder. They say that he had conflicting testimony on chain of custody matters. Richer, according to Kerry Lake's lawyers, initially testified that the county received so many ballots on Election Day that the ballots are simply processed at MCTEC before being counted at Runbeck, because Runbeck has a high-speed counter and there were so many ballot packets. Richard then changed his testimony to say that the ballots are counted at MCTEC and the counts are then documented on chain of custody forms before being transferred to Runbeck, where they are counted again. They say that such inconsistency on a material fact like chain of custody supports the claims of Kerry Lake, and they also support the idea that this is a matter of public concern. County recorder doesn't even know how it works exactly. In addition, Richard testified that he, as a custodian of Maricopa County in the chain of custody documents, he says that he produced all chain of custody forms with a ballot count for early ballots in response to Kerry Lake's request. However, Lake's lawyers say such production did not occur and indeed would be inconsistent with Richard's testimony discussed above that the early vote ballots are simply processed and then later counted at Runbeck. While the court found that this evidence did not show clear and convincing evidence of intentional misconduct, it clearly is supportive of Kerry Lake's claims, and it also raises a matter of concern with the public. Such concerns are underscored by the 25,000 ballot increase in the number of ballots reported on November 10th from the days prior reported total. The magical 25,000 ballots. Poof! Out of nowhere. At the conclusion of the trial, Lake's lawyers say the court stated, the judge said, I'll also say this to everybody that I appreciate. You know, I know this is a highly contested and an emotional issue on both sides, but I want to express my appreciation for counsel for both sides, for your professionalism and your ability to present this case in a way that was thought through, meaningful, and thank you. Right. And the judge did say that. I listened to him say it. And so the judge wouldn't say that if he was unhappy with the case. Plaintiff Kerry Lake put forward evidence in good faith that showed substantial support for her claims, claims which also remain of great public concern. Hobbs's motion for sanctions is not supported by case law or the record. Trust in the election process is not furthered by punishing those who bring legitimate claims, as Lake did here. And in fact, sanctioning Kerry Lake would have the opposite effect. It would. It would show people that this feels like if you even question her, or the law, or, you know, the outcome, that you're going to be punished. That's not what is useful to our society. We should have people challenging elections. We should have very nicely run elections so that challenges, you just get laughed right out, right? Oh, you know, it's not even a joke. because it's so perfectly run. It's transparent. We can all see it. It's all open and obvious. This was not that. For the foregoing reasons, they request that the sanctions are denied. Signed by Blemlaw, Arizona, and Kurt Olson from D.C. Copying all of Lake's, of Hobbs's lawyers, of course, everybody, for the Maricopa County Board of Directors as well. That's Carrie Lake's response. Now, let's take a look at the final decision from the judge. So we had ourselves a quick look at the Hobbs motion. We just also talked about the Carrie Lake response motion. And then we're going to see the opinion as well, right after we listen to a word from our sponsors, our friends over at 4patriots.com. My friends, a food shortage could be coming. Even in the United States, experts have written about this as recently as July. Drought, inflation, even new policies are pushing America's food supply near its breaking point. That's why survival food is more important now than ever. And you can create your own stockpile of the best-selling 4Patriot survival food kits ever. This is not ordinary food. We're talking about good for 25 years, super survival food, hand-packed right in family-owned facilities in the United States, giving jobs to over 200 Americans. The kits are compact, they're sturdy, they're water-resistant, and they stack easily. They have different delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, and you can make these meals in less than 20 minutes. Just add boiling water,
simmer, and serve.
And right now, you can go to 4patriots.com. Use code Robert to get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including this 3-month survival kit. You'll get their famous guarantee for an entire year after your order, plus free shipping on orders over $97. They're called 4Patriots because a portion of every sale is donated to charities who support our veterans and their families. Go to 4patriots.com. Use code Robert to get 10% off. That's 4patriots.com. Use code Robert. Start building your own stockpile today. Yes, my friends, go over to 4Patriots and get yourself that delicious survival food so that you don't starve to death out there. We certainly want you around for a very long time. And so we are going to continue on. Judge Thompson drafts his opinion. Filed 12:27 at 11:25 a.m., the Honorable Peter Thompson from the Maricopa County Superior Court files this in the case of Carrie Lake versus Hobbs. This is the minute entry. This is the decision on the motion for sanctions that was filed by Katie Hobbs. She wanted over $600,000 paid to her from Carrie Lake, saying that her complaint was baseless and that it was groundless and it was done in bad faith. Let's see what the judge says. Pending before this court are several motions for sanctions, some submitted by many different people. Motion for sanctions. The judge has said this court has fully considered the arguments, the affidavits, and the memoranda of law, and I have decided. Judge Thompson writes, Katie Hobbs and her defendants, they each seek an award of their attorney's fees pursuant to Arizona law, which mandates that this court make an award if it finds that a complaint has been brought without substantial justification. Substantial justification means that the claim or the defense is groundless and it's not made in good faith. So it's sort of like a math equation. Okay, groundless plus bad faith equals without substantial justification. 1 + 1 = 2. Let's see if the judge finds it. The court agrees with Katie Hobbs' statements that the elections are purely statutory and election contests provide limited forms of relief. Whew, that was scary for a minute. Further, that an election contest presumes the good faith of election officials and that they can draw reasonable presumptions thereafter. The judge said it is also true that Hobbs asked each and every witness at trial if they had either intentionally committed misconduct or knew anyone who had perpetrated intentional misconduct, aimed to influence the election, right? And we saw that. We even commented on that. There was one individual, one lawyer in particular, who made that kind of her closing question. Did you do this? Did you wreck this election? No, I didn't. Do you know anybody else who wrecked this election? No, I don't. Okay, because they were playing that angle with the judge. They were saying that this needs to be an identifiable person, a name and a bucket of votes. The judge says no witness answered in the affirmative. Of course, nobody's going to admit to, you know, multiple felonies. Nevertheless, it's also true that Hobbs alleged in their pleadings, attachments, and exhibits, and even argued at the hearing, that the testimony and the conduct of the election itself, together with statistical analysis, would meet the requirements of the law by convincing and clear evidence. This court does not doubt Carrie Lake's belief and her perception of the evidence. However, the analysis of whether Carrie Lake's claims were groundless or made in bad faith is not limited to subjective views. Okay, so the judge is saying that it doesn't matter what Carrie Lake believes alone. Okay, Carrie Lake might believe that, you know, believe everything she says. But even if she does believe it, that's not enough to exonerate her from the possibility of bad faith. The judge says, although 8 of Lake's claims were dismissed as a matter of law, which we read through here, 2 claims did survive and they did actually go to trial. Granting a hearing on those claims was a question of law, applied to facts and not a benevolent act, says the judge. In other words, I didn't do this just to waste our time. I was trying to test this case to see if there was enough there to go to trial. As a result of the hearing required under the law, Carrie Lake's allegations survived dismissal. They were subject to factual and legal scrutiny, and they were ultimately found by this court as failing to meet the certain evidentiary standards, and those ones were tossed. They say that at the hearing, Carrie Lake was not successful in eliciting, this is actually at the trial now, at the trial, Carrie Lake was not successful in eliciting from any defendant admissions of intentional malfeasance aimed at altering the outcome. However, she did produce testimony of an expert, Clay, which ultimately was not accepted by the court, but who did argue that intentional malfeasance was the root cause of the tabulator malfunctions on election day. That was Clay Parikh's testimony, where he said that there was a script that was written to update all of the printers. And the only way to update all of the printers was to get in there and intentionally manipulate the script. You can't do it by accident. Plaintiff also presented statistical analysis based on 220 affidavits of voters who did vote, but reported frustrations with tabulator malfunctions and lines on election day. Lake also presented expert evidence, which attempted to establish a relationship between exit polling and results on election day and projected Republican voters who did not actually vote because they were suppressed. They were dissuaded because they heard about all the chaos on that day. I'll go after lunch. I'll go after dinner. I'll vote on the way to my morning meeting. Oh, I can't wait in line for my morning meeting. I'll come back later. You never get around to it. Those people wanted to vote. They were suppressed from voting. They were going to the polling places as a regular part of their day until the government failed. So they were suppressed. And Richard Barris came out and he said, you know, it's really hard to quantify those people. Yes, we can quantify the people who check in, the people who come in and they say, hi, I'm so-and-so, can I vote? They say, no, sorry, you can't. Go wait in line for 2 hours. If they checked in, you can quantify them. But what about the people who just drove right on by, saw the line and said, this is nuts? You can't quantify those people. Richard Barris attempted to. The statistical analysis of polling results also argued a connection between a range of anticipated Republican votes which never materialized and which Richard Barris testified could have influenced the outcome of the election, trying to check that box. But the judge says that testimony was not accepted because of faulty underpinnings, in fact, unsupported assumptions and foundation. The judge continues and says, the case law regarding election challenges dates back to territorial days when ballots were counted by hand. There are no cases which rule in or out a statistical analysis as a method for proving elements of an election challenge. So in other words, you can't do what Richard Barris did. Rule in or rule out. Actually, you could. You could make the argument. But the law makes clear that Carrie Lake was required to show a specific number of votes affected, which would impact the election outcome, right? An identifiable bucket, a hard number. The court was not persuaded that, among other failures of proof, statistical analysis with projected range of votes based on assumptions as to people who did not vote, met the burden of clear and convincing evidence, requiring a specific number of votes to be added or subtracted. This ruling is not an exhaustive recitation of the basis for that ruling. The court refers the parties to that ruling if you want to know why I ruled that way. The judge says, there is no doubt in this case that each side believes firmly in its position with great conviction. The fact that Carrie Lake failed to meet the burden of clear and convincing evidence required for each element does not equate to a finding that her claims were or were not groundless or presented in bad faith. Any legal decision must be based on the law and facts rather than subjective or partisan opinions, no matter how strongly held. The court has heard all the evidence and the arguments. The court has carefully examined and thought through the facts and the evidence before, in the motions, and at the hearings. And so, accordingly, the court finds that Carrie Lake's claims presented in this litigation were not groundless, were not brought in bad faith under the law. Therefore, it is ordered denying Katie Hobbs's motion for attorney's fees and sanctions. Sorry, Mark. Carrie Lake's not paying your bill there, buddy boy. Assessment of taxable costs. Says a prevailing party in Superior Court is entitled to an award of taxable costs. And so Secretary of State Katie Hobbs has presented her request for $5,900. They hired expert witness Ryan Macias, the dude who some people think was reading from the screen when he testified on Zoom, who was retained as an expert, testified at a hearing. A separate request is for expert witness fees in the amount of $22,000 was submitted by Katie Hobbs. Defendants have not submitted any other court fees. So the court finds that the submitted expert witness fees are appropriate. So Carrie Lake's going to have to cough up $22,000 plus $5,900. Katie Hobbs sued in her capacity. Also submitted a signed declaration of an attorney, ABBA. They want $4,600 for Maxwell Schechter, the person designated by them to be present at the inspection of the ballots. So he wanted $4,600 for that. Compensation, he signed, he's $565 per hour, 8.3 hours in the inspection. Woo. Although he did not testify at trial, the choice of the defendants to employ him was based upon qualifications, and he was the opposition to Mr. Clay Parikh. The court finds that the compensation for that is appropriate. $5,900 is awarded to Secretary of State Hobbs. Governor-elect also gets $22,000 taxable costs, also gets $4,600 as compensation for her inspector. It's ordered that the amounts entered with this judgment shall run with an annual interest rate 7.5% per annum. The court has, having entered now its findings of fact, conclusions of law, and orders on December 24th, and all matters, this court having been resolved, nothing else pending, it is hereby ordered confirming the election of Katie Hobbs as Arizona governor-elect pursuant to the law and entering a final judgment in this matter dated December 27th, 2022. Gross. All right. So that all, of course, signed off by the very honorable Peter A. Thompson. Yucky to hear that, but what can we do? Appeal. Carrie Lake has already done that, in fact. And shout out to our friend John McGarvey over on Locals, who already linked us up with what I thought might happen today, which is Carrie Lake's notice of appeal hits the docket. And in fact, you can see it right here. And let's see. Yeah, it's just the notice of appeal. Very, very quick filing. So let's go through this in some detail as soon as we can get the red pen out, so we can properly mark this up. Carrie Lake files her notice of appeal. This one hits the docket. 12:27, 3:59 p.m. filed by her lawyers, Blem Law and Kurt Olson. We've got Carrie Lake versus Katie Hobbs. The appeal here already. Plaintiff Carrie Lake hereby provides her notice of appeal pursuant to Arizona law. And the way this works in Arizona and many other states is you got to file your notice of appeal first. It's just a notice. It's just saying, okay, we've got a whole stinking appeal coming. Brace yourselves. And so you have to file this quickly. Then you have a lot more time to file a much more substantive motion after you've gone through the transcripts and you analyze the different facets of the law. But let's see what the notice tells us. Carrie Lake provides her notice of appeal. This is the caption. She says the special action is captioned as Carrie Lake personally versus Katie Hobbs in a number of different capacities. Also involves Stephen Richer, onesie twosie Bill Gates, Jack Seller, and others. We know we've got Scott Jarrett is on there, along with other from the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors. The case number is 095403, Maricopa County Superior Court. Plaintiff Carrie Lake takes this appeal. What specifically, Carrie, are you appealing? Here, she says, this is the final judgment entered December 27th that denied all of Lake's requested relief and dismissed the case. Incorporated into the judgment from the appeal are the granting of the motions to dismiss of counts 2 and counts 4. Those were the two remaining counts that proceeded to the trial or the hearing. Plaintiff appeals to the Division 1 of Arizona Court of Appeals. Plaintiff will also seek direct review from the Arizona Supreme Court as well. Signed by Brian James Blim, Carrie Lake's lawyers, all filed and copied to the Elias Law Group and everybody over at Perkins Coie, making sure they're all well aware of it. So they've got the Exhibit A, which is the minute entry, which was just recently filed. This is the one that we just read through, and they've got the rest of the case file attached just for the record. All of that now being submitted to the Arizona Court of Appeals, Division 1. Of course, we will continue to follow as these appeals work their way through the courts. And Carrie Lake promised to appeal. Of course, that has happened. Some people were wondering, myself included, as to whether she would continue to appeal after there was a request for sanctions. You know, if there was no sanctions or no penalties, would she still appeal it? Of course she is. And we'll see where this goes. Now, I don't know that she's going to get a different outcome just because it's an election case. And as we've covered here, my friends, there have been so many election cases that we've covered that have been appealed. None of them had any merit. By the time this gets its way up to the Division I in Arizona, Katie Hobbs, my understanding, is already going to be ensconced in power. We'll see if anything happens, but we will continue to cover it. We'll stay optimistic. Hopefully, Arizona can be saved, but we'll continue to cover, of course. Now, there's another very interesting article from Rachel Alexander that I wanted to share with you because she tells us, she gives us a nice summation of this. Rachel Alexander, of course, is somebody I'd recommend you follow. She published this over on Town Hall. This is what she says. It's an opinion piece. She says, the dismissal of Carrie Lake's election lawsuit shows that voter disenfranchisement no longer matters. Can't vote, who cares? She writes, the trial court judge in Carrie Lake's election lawsuit threw out her case on Saturday and got rid of this trial, calling it a travesty of justice. Judge Thompson had the trial in 2 days. Legal experts say that the opinion resembled other opinions out there. Now, she's making the claim that, you know, maybe Mark Elias was involved in the drafting of the opinion. I would not go that far. I don't think in any way that Mark Elias is, you know, emailing the judge or anything like that. Like, that would be so egregious. But that being said, right, like, Mark Elias has been involved in many other election lawsuits around this country, and all of it is posted up for free at democracydocket.com or whatever. And so he's got, in other words, Judge Thompson, if he wanted to write an opinion that mirrored the rest of the country, it's very easy for him to do that. Okay. And I'm not trying to impugn this judge, you know, at all, but this judge, or rather, you know, when judges write opinions, one of the things they do is they look to other opinions, right? And this is just a normal thing. They look to other case law in other parts of the country. So if this judge's opinion is going to mirror, let's say, you know, a case that came out of Pennsylvania or a Georgia case that was also favorable to, and all of these election cases, we've covered so many of them, large portions of them have gone in favor of presuming the legitimacy, presuming the, it's the presumption of integrity of the election, right? So it doesn't surprise me that it's far off. But the, what Ms. Alexander continues to tell us here, she writes, she says the standard should have been whether voters were disenfranchised, right? That's the standard. Not all the additional hoops that were added, which of course are provided by the law. She makes this point. If inner city blacks had been disenfranchised, Thompson would not have added all those additional requirements. He would have made the law fit, her opinion. But she does reference this person. She says Robert Guava or Gouvier, Robert Guavier, somebody, weird name, says a rare attorney who isn't afraid to speak up, describes himself as watching prosecutors, judges, and politicians, said the standard should have been whether there was voter suppression, right? And on this point, I do agree with Ms. Alexander wholeheartedly. She's, I think, dead right about this. If Stacey Abrams, for example, had had her voter block that was disenfranchised or couldn't vote at 47% of centers, right, in Georgia, do you think that this whole thing would have been this way, gone this way? No, it wouldn't have. Instead, the judge said Lake had to show an extremely vague high bar in order to prevail, and that an election official intentionally caused the printer changes, and that many of the disturbing, pieces of evidence were explained away, saying he ignored long lines and other things. And look at this. Even with the higher burden required by Thompson, a well-known lawyer called Viva Frey, whose real name is David Freiheit, said Lake's team showed that there was intentionality and believed the case was a slam dunk. Viva's in the house, man. And Viva's right next door at vivabarneslaw.locals.com. So they go on. Okay, I wanted to share this with you because she's got a different take on this judge. Now, you know, in my opinion, this judge is sort of has his hands tied by what the law says. The law is insane. The law requires all sorts of high levels of proof. But I do agree that the judge, you know, was probably really, 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 really wanting to make this opinion stay, to make it stick so that it, you know, he doesn't have to reverse the outcome of the election. But what Ms. Alexander got for us is just some, she's done some amazing research on this. She says in 2020, well, we'll leave that one alone. But in Berlin, Germany, she says this year, the court ordered a new election for the same reason that Lake requested one. Long lines due to logistical issues. There was no requirement of intent or showing that problems affected the outcome, right? Long lines is that type of suppression. Chaotic scenes, embarrassing irregularities at Berlin's ballot stations during last month's general election have shaken confidence in Germany's election system. Final election results will be published. Berlin held elections. There was a referendum. Ballot papers were delivered to the wrong districts. Trouble had been predictable. It's a total mess. Confidence in the system has been shattered. And so there are, you know, issues like this all over the place. And Ms. Alexander wrote an excellent piece for us there. And here's what she said. A friend described the situation for her. She says, "We don't have a justice system and voting is becoming pointless. Only Democrat votes matter in our country now. Democrats can just elect themselves now. You can just have a Secretary of State called Katie Hobbs who just becomes a Secretary of State. And then you don't even need voters. Don't even need polling places on election day. Because who cares if people vote or not? Voter fraud experts believe the Democrats started targeting states years ago. States like Washington, California, then moved to Colorado. Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania are their latest targets. They intend to move on to states like Florida next, if not stopped. Voter disenfranchisement has become one of the most important issues facing Republicans today. And if not stopped, we will become a one-party nation." This is over from Rachel Alexander. This is an excellent piece. I'd really encourage you to go follow her and support her work. She's also on Twitter at @Rach_IC. She wrote a great piece, and I think she's dead right. And her friend that she was talking to has hit the nail on the head. People like Mark Elias are extremely excited about all of their election litigation success. This is Mark Elias. He is the founder of Democracy Docket. He's the partner at Elias Law Group, presumably somebody who, you know, according to the motion for sanctions, approves the bills. He founded Democracy Docket, which is another, you know, it's a left-wing progressive media platform, they call it. Opinion analysis about voting rights, election, and democracy. His law group is focused on, as far as I can tell, he represents a lot of election litigation lawsuits, kind of like the one we just covered. So he's here. He is in absolute love with his dog. He's one of the people on Twitter with profile pictures of their dogs. Okay, not themselves for whatever reason. Okay. And Banner, the dog looks great. I'm sure the dog's awesome. Bodie sounds like his name. I'm sure he's great. But here's what he said. Starting next week, we're bringing back favorites. He says that this all he does is sort of fight Republicans. And he was extremely excited about the victory when Carrie Lake lost. Here's what he wrote. If you have some time today, you got to listen to our summation of what we've accomplished in 2022. He says, new, a must-read year-end review of voting rights litigation in 2022 by Ellis Champion, over from the Democracy Docket, which is the Mark Elias organization. And look at these details they have for us. This is what the Democrats are doing. Republicans have no answer, as far as I can tell. They write, a lot has happened since we last looked at the voting rights. Now that we're at the close of the year, we want to give you a review on all the things that our Democratic lawfare lawyers are doing. It was no easy feat. We can't touch upon every decision that impacted voters. There were some notable trends. One, Republicans in their attempts to curb mail-in voting, they had some success, but they failed on multiple fronts. They say throughout 2022, GOP-affiliated groups filed a deluge of anti-voting lawsuits, many of which attacked mail-in voting. Two biggest impacts from the GOP's attacks came in two swing states. In Wisconsin, a conservative group prevailed in banning drop boxes across the state. And in Pennsylvania, litigation over mail-in voting reached new levels. After multiple rounds, the GOP succeeded in its quest to ban the counting of undated and wrongly dated mail-in ballots, right? Mark Elias and Democracy Docket, they were wanting that stuff to stay. Undated, wrongly dated, doesn't matter. It should stay in here. They say, though, although the Republicans also succeeded in blocking a new no-excuse mail-in voting law in Delaware, otherwise, they were largely unsuccessful at chipping away at this popular method of voting. Other conservative lawsuits attacked various aspects of mail-in voting, and they all came up short. And look what state is right at the top of that list. Arizona, Massachusetts, New York, and North Carolina. Republicans didn't pull off all their attempts to restrict mail-in voting, but their strategy attacking this method as a tool did have a clear consequence. Polling shows that they lost a lot of elections, but now Republicans might shift their tone to vote by mail because they know that they have to win elections. We'll see if that changes. Republicans backed voter suppression laws and practices. They met their fate in court. In Pennsylvania, Republicans wanted to throw out one of their own laws and they lost. In New York, GOP election officials tried to ignore state laws, and each time the court put an end to their subversion. In Arizona, they say the most harmful provisions of two GOP-backed voter suppression laws. Listen to what they say. Voter suppression laws. It was ensuring that voters' registrations weren't needlessly canceled. You know, this is just... They'll talk about GOP integrity laws as voter suppression laws. And voter suppression is basically everything. We covered this one a long time ago. This was a list put out by the Voting Rights Alliance. 61 forms of voter suppression. Okay, basically everything is voter suppression. If Republicans want photo ID laws, guess what? Voter suppression. IDs. If you get rid of early voting, voter suppression. Robocalls, flyers, voter suppression. Police officers at polling places, voter suppression. If you relocate polling places, voter suppression. All of these things, right? Proof of citizenship, voter suppression. Failure to pre-register 17-year-olds. Okay, if you don't just automatically register the youth to vote, voter suppression. All of these things. Okay, look at this. Long lines right there. It's on the list as voter suppression from the Voting Rights Alliance. But the Maricopa County Supreme Court's like, well, whatever. Who cares? If any one of these things, okay, if you have, you know, police at certain polling places in certain locations in the United States, people will freak out about that. They'll call it voter suppression. Proof of citizenship, voter suppression. But long lines, evidently nobody cares about. So Mark Elias, their team, they're fighting against voter suppression laws. Voter suppression laws, according to them, in my opinion, are probably only the things that result in less Democratic votes. They're also in Georgia. They got a number of voter suppression laws through the court system. They say in Arkansas, a judge struck down voter suppression laws that attacked every aspect of the voting process. A federal district court judge also struck down laws in Florida. Over the course of 2022, Democracy Docket says four voter suppression laws in 2021 were also permanently blocked, a resounding victory for Native American voters. They've got felony disenfranchisement laws that are coming back. They've got cases out of Mississippi, North Carolina. They're in litigation in Tennessee. Courts delivered wins for individuals all over the place: Arkansas, Indiana, North Carolina, Texas, Wisconsin. Some stuff is paused on appeal. What's coming up next? They say we'll keep track of all of our important litigation on our cases page. And look at all these cases. Lake versus Hobbs, they had that one going. They're here in Arizona on the attorney general case. Mississippi, they're focusing on redistricting and legislation there. In Arkansas, challenging voting machines. New York, challenging counting and runoffs. All of these. Lawsuit after lawsuit. You've got 56 pages of these. Okay, just click next until your little heart explodes. That's what the Democratic lawyers are doing all across this country. It's all beautifully organized. And if you actually click one of these things, it's amazing. It's really good. They've got courtroom updates, motion to dismiss. They have summaries of all. I mean, they probably got law student interns, you know, just working their little butts off all day. The Republicans are just losing elections and losing litigation. Meanwhile, this guy's earning $600,000 fees for 2-day trials. Not bad. All right. Or 500, whatever the fees were. Big fat fees. $500,000 fees for very short, trials. But he wins. So he can charge whatever he wants. He keeps succeeding. And the Democrats are victorious. Now, Carrie Lake, of course, will appeal. And we will, of course, continue to cover it. I hope you join us as we do. Thank you for liking this video and subscribing wherever it is you're watching it. We will look forward to seeing you on the next one. We will see you right back here tomorrow so that together with your help, we can shine that big, beautiful spotlight of accountability and transparency down upon our system with the hope of finding justice. Have a tremendous evening, my friends. I'll see you right back here tomorrow. Bye-bye.